listening to Executive Leaders Radio here on AM 860 WWDB, the Delaware Valley's only money talk radio. This is Herb Cohen with my co-host Keith Ashlock from the Delaware Valley Industrial Resource Center and Mr. Jim Hunter from the investment banking firm, of Mufson, Howe & Hunter. We've got a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including Kevin Finn, president of Iron Hill Brewery, Janice Carrington, CEO, founder, and owner of Plum Enterprises, Jack Protesto, president of ProSigns, and John Morrissey, a partner of Jackson Cross Partners. I'd like to introduce to you first Kevin Finn, president of Iron Hill Brewery. Kevin, what is Iron Hill Brewery?
Iron Hill Brewery is a brewery restaurant company. We have 8 locations in the greater Philadelphia area. Brew all of our beer on site. So it's really about great fresh food and really great fresh beer and great service.
How'd you get involved with beer?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. Probably about 15 years ago, I was living in Wilmington, Delaware, and I went to Rhode Island actually for a bachelor's party, and I ended up meeting my wife over the weekend. And at that point, she was living in Boston, and I was living in Delaware, and we started this long distance relationship. She would call me up at night, and I, being in my 20s, and I played soccer a lot, and I was actually involved with the JCs, the Junior Chamber of Commerce, and other things. So I was out a lot at night, had an active social life. So she decided I needed a hobby to keep me in more at night.
We'll have to ask her opinion about that. Yeah.
So she
found the truth here.
She decided that I needed a hobby, and for my birthday that fall, she bought me a homebrewing kit. So I started brewing beer. Started brewing beer in my basement. Loved beer. Eventually, my partner Mark joined me, and he would come over on Sundays. We would sit around and watch football games. You want to brew beer in the cold weather, unless you have a refrigerator. We weren't that technically savvy, but he would come over. We would brew beer. He would tinker with the equipment. He's a chemi from Penn. I'm I guess more creative type. So I would do the recipes, and it was great. You know, we'd make this beer. We were the two beer geeks that were always bringing a 6-pack of homebrew beer to parties. And we kind of wondered whether people even liked it as homebrewers. So we entered in some homebrewing contests, and we started to win awards. So, wow, maybe we can do this, make a living at it. And decided to put together a business plan and to make it a business.
Where the millions and millions of dollars come from to get Iron Hill Brewery up and running?
Really family and friends.
And was it millions and millions of dollars you needed?
It wasn't millions and millions of dollars. The first one, we had a lot of sweat equity in it. It's also a funny story. I am still at that point dating my future wife. And I decided that I was going to call my father-in-law and give him a call, and he knew what was going on, and he felt that I was gonna ask him for money. So I gave him a call. I said, "Hey, Bob." I was really nervous when I called him. "Hey, Bob, how you doing?" And small talk and chit chat. And people that know me, I'm not very good at that. That's not really my skill set. But so it went on and on, went on. And finally, Bob said, "Okay, Kevin, what'd you call for?" And I go, "Well, I'd like to ask your permission to marry your daughter." And he goes, "Oh."
Because he thought you were going to ask for money instead?
He thought I was going to ask for money to start the restaurant company. And eventually he was the one that wrote the first check.
I see. So you raised it from friends and family originally.
My father is involved. My brothers are involved. My cousin, my uncle.
So are you guys successful with Iron Hill Brewery?
We've been extremely successful.
How do you judge success?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my partners and I have an argument with it. I look at market share maybe, but I think success is based on, you know, are your customers happy? Are they satisfied with what you're doing? That's really the big part. But also, are your employees happy? Mm-hmm. And are you happy?
How large or how small is the team?
Well, we have about 750 employees throughout the region.
How many?
750.
Mm-hmm. Wow, you guys are really a legitimate size business here.
Oh, yeah. It's a big.
How many restaurants?
8 restaurants total, all in the Philadelphia area.
8 restaurants, 750 people. Where are you from originally?
I grew up in South Jersey, Glassboro.
Glassboro, New Jersey. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have a couple brothers. Both are involved in the business. I call him my baby brother, but he's not a baby anymore, is the head brewer, actually, in our Wilmington, Delaware restaurant.
And so What distinguished you as a kid? What made you different?
I was probably more driven than most of the other kids. When I was 14, I decided to paint a house. It was an old Victorian house in the town next door. My mother knew the woman who owned it, and she went away for the summer, and I painted it. And I got paid like $2.50 an hour. I don't know what minimum wage was.
Mm-hmm.
So I got all my buddies in the neighborhood to come help me paint this house. And I paid them $2 an hour, and they were thrilled to death because none of us were old enough to really work anyway. So I made a little – everybody who got to work, I made a little bit of it. But, you know, they were happy with the job. I was happy to get the house painted. I needed help to do it. So it's kind of my first endeavor in terms of running a business.
Cool.
Kevin, you have this 750-person firm now that you're running. You
know, sure.
You're heading up that group and all of the things that come with that. That's come from – it started with your love of brewing beer. Right. So that's where you started and you grew that into this sort of thing. What I'm curious as to, at what point are you still brewing beer? Mm-hmm. Do you still love brewing beer? Or do you see conflicts in the idea that you have to run the business and also want to love brewing beer? What takes priority for you?
I'm not a brewer. I brewed the first few batches of beer in our first two stores. When we opened our Newark store, I quickly became a restaurant manager. And I'm not a very good restaurant manager either. You know, we have a great team. I have a leadership team of seven people who are wonderful. Most of them have been with me since the very beginning. Two of them are my partners. But each restaurant has a management team, so we have about 80 managers throughout the company also.
All right, so here's what I heard you say. You're not very good at brewing beer, and you're not very good at running a restaurant.
No.
So what are you good at? I mean, how do you do this?
I'm good at running the whole business. It's not about being a good restaurateur. It's not about being a good brewer. It's about being a good business person and seeing what are the right decisions to move, what are the right people to hire, who should stay on the team, giving them great feedback. I have a woman who's been working for me now for she started as a hostess, and now she's a regional manager. She runs four of our stores, and wonderful woman, smart, much smarter than I am. But I pushed her. She went back to school and got her college degree. We helped pay for that. And I expect her to someday run this business. So it's about the people that work for us.
Awesome.
Jim?
Kevin, how do you manage all those people? It's truly a family affair. You have two partners.
Sure.
You have seven on your leadership team. You have family and friends that are shareholders.
Mm-hmm.
How do you manage all of those people?
Well, success makes it easy, I think. You know, we've been growing and been successful even through the recession. So, we have our membership meeting. We're not a corporation, but we only get a couple people to come out. You know, as long as I'm sending them a check every year, they're generally pretty happy. my philosophy is just do the right thing. You know, you do the right thing by customers, you do the right thing by your people, you do the right thing by the communities that we're in. We're very involved with the communities that we're in and try to give back to them. We have a lot of – we have a program we call Give 20 where we give out coupons to – could be the local band boosters. And they give them out to whoever they want. Anybody who comes in that night will give 20% of the food sales to that organization. So it's about giving back to everyone that is involved, you know, all the stakeholders, I think, in your business. And that's important.
The dollars to – I understand you raised money initially from family and friends, but you've grown to develop all these other restaurants and support 750 people. Where did all the other dollars come from? What was the fundraising like in this business?
Well, I mean, it's changed and developed over the years. We're with Citibank now, but we started out with a little bank, and I remember our first banker, Mark Plisky, who's out in Lancaster now. I'm still in touch with him. He went out on a limb for us when he gave us that first, it was $400,000 bank loan, and it seems like nothing now. But back then it was a big deal. You know, we did an SBA loan with the first business. We did one in the second. We actually won an award from the SBA because of the jobs we created.
Did you guys sign personally for these loans?
Mm-hmm.
Are your names still personally on these loans?
Oh, yes.
These are pretty substantial loans nowadays. These are millions and millions of dollars. I'm sure. How are you able to sleep at night? I mean, you know, it's like, you know, this
you know,
is
at some
a
point
lot
it doesn't matter. I think that's kind of how I look at it. You know, after $1 million, what's the difference? You know, come take it. I think it's about having a good relationship with your banker and having a really great track record. We've been doing this for a long time. We've been in business for 13 years. We haven't closed any restaurants. you know, it's about being a good business person and running a really good business. And that's really what I do.
When stuff goes wrong, mm-hmm. you don't tell your banker about it, because then they get, I mean, you got to like.
No, I have a pretty good relationship.
So you tell them, will you tell your banker what's really happening?
My advice to someone would be to tell them first. We actually missed our covenants last December.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in this day and age, I'm like, oh my God.
Did you beg for forgiveness after the fact?
No, I told them like 3 or 4 months out that we were probably going to miss them. And it ended up being by just a couple $1,000s. It wasn't a big deal, but I thought it would be bigger. And I talked to them months out. I said, look, this is the deal. This is why it's happening. It was more of a.
So what ended up happening? Because you warned them in advance as opposed to after the fact, what's the net result on the relationship? Do they trust you more or less
now? Much more.
Oh, so because you warned them and you had a trusting relationship with them, sure. They really learned that they can trust you.
In my case, you know, I can't speak for other people in their relationship with mm-hmm. the bank, and I know the banking environment right now is brutal, but.
Mm-hmm. You have partners in the business?
I do have two partners.
Uh-huh. And how do you guys like solve conflicts? You sue each other all the time?
they're a part of the leadership team, and I'm very big at delegating and trying to come to consensus on things. I mean, I have people that are much smarter than me that work for me and have been doing this a lot longer. So when it's a big decision, we'll meet and talk it through and then mm-hmm. usually come to a consensus on it. They're very active in the operational part mm-hmm. of the business. One mm-hmm. runs the brewery. One mm-hmm. is the culinary side, designs mm-hmm. menus.
The website address for Iron Hill Brewery?
IronHillBrewery.com.
It's nice and easy. IronHillBrewery.com. We've been speaking with Kevin Finn, president of Iron Hill Brewery, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, Executive Leaders Radio, to learn more about our executive leaders. And please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This Business Spotlight is brought to you by Executive Leaders Radio Program. Joining us today is Steve Economou. Tell us a little bit about Curtis Financial.
Well, Curtis Financial is a middle market investment banking firm headquartered here in Philadelphia.
And what makes your business unique or special, Steve?
Well, what I like about it is we solve complex and challenging problems for business owners. We help them sell their business so that they have no regrets. We help them raise the right capital to help them grow their business. And we help them to understand what their business is worth.
And why is your business a great place to work?
Well, it's a great place to work because our clients take what we do very seriously. So there's no hiding for us. Every situation is different. And for us, that's great. We always continue to learn. At the same time, there's a lot of stress in what we do. While it's not for everyone, we thrive on it.
Terrific. What do you enjoy most about your job?
I enjoy the combination of a highly technical field combined with dealing with people, high degree of psychology that goes into working on a transaction.
And do you have an interesting success story?
I have lots of success stories, a couple that come to mind. One is helping a group of engineers realize their American dream by helping them to sell their semiconductor business. 3 of the 4 founders were immigrants to the United States. They had built a business to about $20 million in revenues, and when it was time to sell, they wanted to make a lot of money, and I was able to help them do that in what was a very challenging transaction. I've done the same thing for a group of PhDs. We were able to help them sell their business for about twice what they thought they might get for it.
And how can someone reach you?
They can call me at 215-557-2219. If they want to email me, they can go to curtisfinancial.com and find my email address there.
Today we've been speaking with Steve Economou from Curtis Financial. This Business Spotlight has been brought to you today by Executive Leaders Radio Program.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio here on AM 860 WWDB, the Delaware Valley Zone Money Talk Radio. This is Herb Cohen with my co-host Keith Ashlock from Delaware Valley Industrial Resource Center and Jim Hunter from the investment banking firm of Mufson, Howe & Hunter. This is Herb, and I'd love to introduce you, Janice Carrington. Janice is the CEO, founder, and owner of an organization called Plum Enterprises. Janice, what do you guys do at Plum Enterprises?
Well, basically, Herb, what Plum does is we empower people to avoid head injury and hip fractures so they can enjoy a healthy, active lifestyle.
What do you mean? What do you do? How do you do that?
Well, we have a full line of fall safety wear, 2 types of helmets, hip protectors. We designed the original hip protector, and extremity guards. So individuals at risk for a head injury from seizures or a disability or just wanting to avoid a fall for balance disorders or hip fracture mm-hmm. or an extremity guard, they can enjoy an active lifestyle restraint-free.
So you're the founder of Plum Enterprises. How did you get the idea for this? Where did it come from? How'd this happen?
Well, it started a long time ago. We were driving in the back roads up to the mountains, and my daughter, my little infant daughter, was in a car seat, a little plastic car seat. And I looked at her as we were weaving amongst these roads and cars, and I thought, her head is so not protected in this car seat if something should fly in or someone should hit us. So I wound up cradling her head the entire way to protect her that way. And it got me thinking about any type of helmets for small children. And from there, I did a tremendous amount of research on head injury among small children. And that was pre-Google, so I wrote around to every agency nationally. People who tested helmets, National Head Injury Foundation, Consumer Product Safety Commission, where head injuries took place, to see if it really was the epidemic I thought it was. And then from there, what alternatives to hard, heavy helmets might be available, so that the first criterion would have to be to make it comfortable for the child and not propel a fall like a heavy helmet. Mm-hmm. So it took a lot of research, a lot of stops and starts, but that was the germ of the idea for the first product that Plum had.
And then?
And as I was developing it, I filed a patent for it. I had learned during my master's thesis that you really have to protect your proprietary creations. And it was an excellent lesson for me. And you wonder why things happen, and then in hindsight you say, oh, I learned so much from that. Mm-hmm. And I had created something for my master's that was appropriated after a company was going to hire me to go out to Chicago and finish this film series for children. And I thought I was going to take that path. I had other things.
So what other products have you developed aside from the helmet?
Well, from the helmet we designed, we had to go up in sizes because originally it was for toddlers. And then we found the niche into the special needs market. It was designed mm-hmm. for mass market active toddlers, and there's mm-hmm. still a market for that. Mm-hmm. But parents of special needs children have a special need for something that's safe and comfortable, lightweight. Mm-hmm. They're more prone to falls mm-hmm. and also attractive and not institutional looking. Mm-hmm. So then from there, of course, we had to expand the sizes from baby sizes all the way up through the adults. Mm-hmm. Then the second helmet came along mm-hmm. that offered some of different options, changeable covers, protective, more specific forehead protection, other things that the customers had asked for along the way. Mm-hmm. So it took years to develop Protect-A-Cap Plus. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we developed Protect-A-Hip, which mm-hmm. is the original hip protector. Mm-hmm. We have multiple patents worldwide. Mm-hmm. And then from there, Protect-A-Wrap that protects the other body parts. Mm-hmm. Anything that would slow down someone and say, I don't want to go out, I'm afraid of falling. Because fear mm-hmm. of falling is a major, major problem for older adults.
So when you were a little girl, did this innovation, did this inventing stuff come through in terms of products? Or what were you like as a little kid?
Well, I was pretty precocious. I wasn't usually taking the safe path. I was always very creative, making up stories, scary stories in the dark, and I still did that with my kids, and that's a whole other show. but I remember doing the first kind of lip syncing at a camp when I was 7, and I thought I wanted to lip sync to Brenda Lee, and I started doing that. So I was never really afraid to do that for some reason. I don't know where it came from. Fear just wasn't really a deterrent. And then it came out as I went into teaching and then with my master's project with my kids. So I was always creating something, was always something that was available to me and almost a requirement. So when I stopped working, when I had my son, I did other creative things. I started doing some TV commercials. I learned how to mm-hmm. do things like that.
How about mom and dad? Were mom and dad in business?
No, my mom and dad they're wonderful people. My dad passed away about 10 years ago. And he had a fabulous sense of humor, mm-hmm. offbeat, and mm-hmm. and thank God I get that because that has helped so much.
Where'd the sense of business come from? Who do you talk to about what to do and what not to do, or do you just like know all the answers?
I don't know all the answers. When I develop a product, I make sure I find people who know the best thing for the patients, be it small children with head injuries or adults with a hip fracture. So I'll pick the brains of pediatricians and people who tested helmets, and I'll track them down all over the country. With hip protectors, the same thing. I went to an orthopedic surgeon, and mm-hmm. you just have to do the right research.
Cool.
Janice, as I'm thinking about you driving through the the hills there and protect wanting to protect your child's head. How did you move? What motivated you to go from that point and all of the hard work and research and development and to take that idea and that concern through a process that led to starting a company? I mean, what motivated, what kept driving you? I mean, how long did that take, that process?
Oh, Keith, that took years. It was first the idea of what was an alternative to heavy helmets. And that was a whole process in itself. And then, you know, as I said, I would contact different agencies, pediatric association, what about head injuries, what's needed, what's not needed. I found someone out in California who tested helmets. And she told me a lot. I picked her brain a lot. And she said, you know, sometimes it's you know, the heaviness propels falls, which seems common sense. But then she also said that if a helmet says safety tested, it doesn't necessarily mean it passed the test. So, and then she said, you know, there's some, you know, if you could absorb the energy. And I thought about that. So then I became an expert on polymers that absorb and transfer and shunt energy away. And I thought that would be the way to go because children's heads are not perfectly round. And this would be the way to really secure it, custom fit, lightweight. So I went there and I just found all the right materials. And we look at the criteria, study the density, the compression recovery, the resistance, and, you know, just look at these numbers and say, well, is it better be a 3 or is it better be an 8? And went from there. And then I...
So you know, what kept driving you? What kept driving you? Where you saw a business opportunity?
No, I don't know. It never occurred to me to not keep going. There were a lot of setbacks along the way. I had developed some early prototypes. I wanted to patent it. So when I was doing the interviewing and the research on it, I insisted that everyone sign a non-disclosure first. Because and then getting it sewn, I went to every factory in New York City. I would come into Penn Station, my pile of quarters, and put the quarter in, go through the yellow pages, and say, okay, we need a single needle machine, you need a Murrow stitch, you need to be able to stuff something, and you need to deal with somebody who's really fussy. And if I got past all those yeses, I said, now I need you to sign a non-disclosure. I'd get in a cab, and I'd go, and I'd talk to all these factories. So the whole manufacturing is a whole show unto itself, because that was an episode. That was something.
Why start a company as opposed to selling the idea to somebody that already made helmets or protective gear?
Well, you know, Jim, I thought of that, and I looked into maybe licensing it. It didn't seem to be the right path for a lot of reasons. I met with some people in New York, and it just didn't seem to be the right path. It sometimes I thought, well, it would be good to do that, but it just didn't seem to be the way to go. And then every factory, when I finally found factories that were able to make the prototype, we'd stand there and said, well, now that we made it for you, we want you to give us your patent. I thought, they must think I'm really silly.
What's the biggest surprise that you've had in terms of running your own business, Janice?
The amount of people that I can actually help and the feedback I get, the letters, the phone calls, the photos, it's incredibly gratifying and humbling. Because I never thought I'd be able to reach that many people. I know there are a lot more to reach, but just the stories that I hear,
How do you go about selling the products? Do you knock on doors? Do you try to sell them on the internet? What's the right way to sell the stuff?
Well, Herb, it's kind of a mixed bag. In the beginning, I did a lot of conferences, medical conferences, PTs, OTs. Once I secured or I decided to focus on the special needs market, mm-hmm. I'd started out with little ads in the back of Child magazine that I would mm-hmm. make. And then someone said, you know, the special needs market would be great. Mm-hmm. So I focused on that. And then I started to do a lot of medical conferences mm-hmm. and trade shows, talk mm-hmm. to a lot of people. And from there, found out other needs that they had, such mm-hmm. as protecting the hip. We are on the internet. We're in some catalogs. And a lot of it's word of mouth, doctors, referrals. I'm not even sure how some of the products reach other mm-hmm. people. We had a call mm-hmm. the other day from a hippotherapy mm-hmm. center mm-hmm. that does hippotherapy for children with disabilities.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
And they had all of our helmets on their website with children using them. So,
what is the website address for Plum Enterprises?
It's plumenterprises.com or fallsafety.com.
Fallsafety.com or plumenterprises.com.
Right.
And real quick, why'd you call the company Plum Enterprises?
Well, a long time ago, I read something that really inspired me and I resonated with it. And it goes, what is more mortifying than having missed the plum for one of courage to shake the tree?
Gotcha.
Interesting.
We've been speaking with Janice Carrigan, the CEO, founder, and owner of Plum Enterprises here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host Keith Ashlock from the Delaware Valley Industrial Resource Center and Jim Hunter, Muffson Howe Hunter. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This Business Spotlight is brought to you by the DVIRC, building business value since 1988. Joining us today is David Perlman. David, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What company are you with, David?
American Paper Tube and Core.
Tell us a little bit about what makes your company special.
I don't know if our company is that special, but from a historical perspective, I think we're a very interesting company. When my grandparents started making paper tubes in 1929, Philadelphia was a major textile manufacturing center, and a lot of the companies used paper tubes. Unfortunately, most of those companies are long gone, and Philadelphia's textile manufacturing industry is basically non-existent. But here we are, 80 years later, still making tubes in the Kensington section of Philadelphia.
So, David, you're running this company now, and what do you enjoy most about doing that?
You know what? It's very challenging, a lot of problems, but it's exciting to try to deal with the problems and try to overcome them, and I actually enjoy it.
Tell us a little bit about your employees.
Our employees are truly the type of employees that build America. They are the classic blue-collar worker, and they're very dedicated, and we're very fortunate to have a very good crew.
What makes your business special?
I think the fact that we're an old-line manufacturing company and that we're still around.
Interesting.
And in light of this economic climate, I think it's an accomplishment.
How can someone reach you, David?
Call me on the phone. I'm not in an ivory tower. The employees come right up in the office, and there I am.
What's the number?
215-739-5718.
We've been speaking with David Perlman from American Paper Tube. Joined us today. Thank you, David. This Business Spotlight has been brought to you by the DVIRC.
Executive Leaders Radio here on AM 860 WWDB, the Delaware Valley's only money talk radio. This is Herb Cohen with my co-host Keith Ashlock. Oop, Keith's not with me. Araceli Gunther, Emerging Strategies Group, is. And Jim Hunter, Muffson Howe Hunter. I'd like to introduce to you Jack Protesto. Jack is the president of ProSigns. Jack, what is ProSigns? What do you folks do?
Well, we're a national sign company. We also do local work. We manufacture electric signs. We do a lot of digital printing. Pretty much specialize in either custom or, for the most part, petroleum industry.
So you do signs and you do other stuff. I guess basically what happened was you had a customer and then you found out other ways you could serve that customer and then other customers you could serve. How old is this business?
The business is 64 years old.
64 years old?
Second generation.
So who started the business?
My father and mother actually worked together for many years, and they were a local sign company in Upper Darby. And for them, we did truck lettering, show cards, paper signs, a little bit of electric, but mostly hand lettering.
So dad said to you one day, hey, Jack, I want you to come in and be president of the company?
Well, didn't work exactly that way.
All right. What happened?
I think at birth, there's nine kids in the family, and four of us were boys. And from birth, you were going to be a sign guy or you were going to get shot.
All right. So tell us about how young you were when you became involved in the business. And what was your first job in the business? And were you paid a competitive wage?
Well, they're all good questions. I can honestly say that I was in a playpen in the sign company. I remember doing jobs. The first sheet metal job I remember doing, my father, I was on a milk crate trying to shut the brake. It was a hand manual brake. And my father pulled it on the other side, and since I was reaching over, he pinched my stomach in the brake and flattened that out. I would say,
how old were you when you were in Boston? You really were raised in a playpen in the store in the shop.
Absolutely.
And then, how young were you when you started? I mean, you were 5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
We were kids. If my father had a big job to do, we would come in and start lettering. He would do the outlines of the letters, and we would. We started with a mall stick and a quill. We'd start the letter, the centers of the letters, and that's how we learned.
How young were you?
We were maybe 8 or 10 or something.
Wow.
Like that.
Wow. So then, how'd you get to be the president?
Well, we started to, I guess, in the, we worked with my parents for all these years. And then about, I guess somewhere, my mom was the president for a while. My brother Bob, who passed away about 11 years ago, was the president.
Sorry to hear that.
And then I became the president then. So I've been the president for 11 years.
Why did they want you to be the president? What special skills did you bring to the party?
I was the next oldest son.
Wait a minute. So it was because you were the next oldest son you were appointed president?
Yep.
All right, but wait a second. At that point, how many years ago was this?
11.
So what size was the business then versus what size is it now?
11 years ago, we had about 25 to 30 employees. We were in Upper Darby and moved at that exact same time. My brother passed away, out to Downingtown into a 70,000-square-foot building, and we were expanding. We did all local work at that point.
So you've managed to triple the business.
Yes.
All right. So evidently, it wasn't just because you were the next in line, or maybe it was, but the point is you were the right selection because you've tripled the business in that period of time.
Well, I'd like to think it was just a big team effort.
What do you mean?
Well, I work with my two brothers.
Wait a minute. Aren't you the smartest guy on the team?
If that's the case, we're in trouble.
All right. So tell us how you did it.
Well, we have we love what we do, first of all. We have a lot of people that have been with the company for many years, and we went through some hard times 11 years ago, and most of those employees stuck with us. They just, everybody loves what they do, and it's just a group effort to grow it and do what we do. Somebody comes up with an idea, we usually just let them run with it.
What is your the most valuable lesson that you can think of that came from your mom or your dad?
Hard work. Hard work, honestly. You really, it's just service. Just, you know, be there for the customer. It's just whatever the customer needs. That was the way my father did it. And I remember watching him. He would come home at night, go to sleep till about 1 o'clock, and there was jobs due. And this was two or three times a week. He'd wake up at 1 in the morning and letter, paper, signs, and show cards. We'd get up as kids, and there'd be show cards and signs all over the living room.
Is that part of the reason for the success or the growth of the business? You just have one speed? That's hard work?
It may be. It's also a little bit of a tough environment. I think if everybody doesn't really feel that way that works at the company, they kind of get chewed up. It's go.
Go or go.
How many family members involved in the business?
There's myself, my two brothers, Vince and Ed.
And how do you work together?
Well, we kind of try and take different responsibilities. And, you know, Vince does part of it. You know, he'll take on a certain amount of responsibilities. My brother Ed actually runs another company. We're all partners in it. It's a Pro Crane Rental. And that's about 20 miles away in Aston. So he runs that. And what we try and do is just... We if anything, we're all asking for help, and nobody really asks for help, but it's just if you need help, everybody's there to help one another. We're all taking on a lot all at the same time, so we're so busy trying to do what we do that we don't get in each other's hair.
Jack, are Mom and Dad still around?
My father passed away 9 months ago.
Sorry to hear
my
that.
My mom's still.
If Dad was around today, how do you think he'd feel about what you've done to the business?
I think he would be... amazed. He just the technology that's out there today has emerged, the industry has changed so much since his days, but he just was always proud of us. He would come in every week and just of course he worked with us up to about maybe 10-12 years ago.
Well, why do you think he'd be proud?
I think he was just always proud of his kids, regardless what they did.
How do you know that?
He would tell us.
That's a great way of learning.
Oh, yeah. Or he'd yell, he'd let you know if he wasn't.
What did Dad teach you? What did you learn from your siblings? What kind of stuff happened in your childhood that affected your business life?
Well, I like to think that we were kind of raised in that farm mentality. You went out, you worked. One of your questions was, when did you start to get paid? And I remember when I got my first paycheck, and it was after I got out of high school. So we didn't work for a paycheck. We worked. My mom, if you needed something, she would help you. She really ran the books. My dad was the sign guy. She was the she really controlled the business side of it. Mm-hmm. And if you needed something, you never needed for anything, but it wasn't the traditional punch the clock.
What was your first car?
It was a 1968 Mustang.
Mm-hmm. How'd you pay for it?
Well, my parents lent me the money to buy it, because I really didn't have any money at
that
point.
They lent you the money. They didn't give you the money.
That's right. They lent it to me.
And how'd you pay it back?
And then what they did is I would do side jobs, kind of. Like, they would say, okay, well, if you do this on the weekend, we worked every Saturday and Sunday. It's just we didn't even know not to work. But she incentivized us to work and to make some extra money.
Mm-hmm. If you wanted to retire nowadays, could you do that?
I can't. No. I have trouble sitting at home on a weekend, so I don't.
So you're really into your work.
Love it.
Mm-hmm. What's the most important lesson that you've learned about business?
I think that the most important lesson is to work hard, to respect other people, in particular, not only your employees, but your customers and your vendors. It's a team effort. We have been helped in business, probably the most help I've ever gotten in business outside of just a group effort is from a vendor. 3M helped us quite a bit to understand how to expand our business, and they did that. They just did it. They spent a lot of money and helped us. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're good, you know, if you work hard and you're good, it just comes back to you.
The website address for ProSigns is www.prosign.net. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. We've had the opportunity of speaking with Mr. Jack Protesto, president of ProSigns, here on Executive Leaders Radio, with my co-host Araceli Gunther, Emerging Strategies Group, and Jim Hunter, Mufsin Hal Hunter. This is Herb Cohen. Please stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This Spotlight is brought to you by the DVRC, building business value since 1988. Joining us today is Michael Strange. Michael, welcome. What company are you with?
Hi, I'm with Bassett's Ice Cream Company.
Bassett's Ice Cream. I've heard of that before. What makes your business special?
Well, we've been around a long time. We're America's oldest ice cream company, established in 1861. I am the fifth generation of my family to run the business.
Right here in Philadelphia.
Here in Philadelphia.
Where'd you start?
Well, it actually was founded in Salem, New Jersey, and my great-great-grandfather moved the business to Philadelphia in the 1800s. And when the Reading Terminal Market opened in 1892, we were one of the very first merchants to go in there.
1892. Yeah. Well, that sounds pretty special. What makes your business a special work environment?
Well, one of the great things about ice cream is that it makes people happy and smile, and it is a fun thing to be in the ice cream business. Mm-hmm.
I understand that. What do you enjoy most about what you do?
I get a lot of satisfaction out of running a business that has really become a Philadelphia institution.
Do you have an interesting success story about Bassett's?
Well, we've been able to grow our business from one retail shop to a wholesale business throughout the region and independent distributors around the country. And most recently, we just started shipping our ice cream to China.
Fascinating. Tell us a little bit about your employees.
Well, I have a wonderful staff. I think that's important for every company that is successful. I have some employees that have been with our company more than one generation. I have a third generation driver who works for us now.
Michael, how can someone reach you?
Our website is www.bassettsicecream.com. There are two T's in Bassett's.
Great. Thank you. We've been speaking with Michael Strange from Bassett's Ice Cream, and this spotlight has been brought to you by the DVIRC.
We're back, and you're listening to Executive Leaders Radio here on AM 860 WWDB, the Double Value Zoning Money Talk Radio. This is Herb Cohen with my co-host, Araceli Gunther, Emerging Strategies Group, and Jim Hunter, Mufsin, Howe, and Hunter. How come your name's last? And I'd like to introduce to you a fellow by the name of John Marcy, who's a partner with Jackson Cross Partners. John, what do you guys do? What does Jackson Cross Partners do?
We're in the commercial real estate business, Herb. We provide a high level of professional services in the real estate arena for corporations and individuals who are either leasing space or buying buildings, both manufacturing as well as office space.
commercial real estate. So what geographic area do you guys cover?
Our company is a regionally based firm. We handle requirements in the state of Delaware, in Philadelphia. We have an office in King of Prussia and an office in South Jersey. So we're really regional in scope.
Mm-hmm.
But we also have a national apparatus that allows us to take requirements all around the country and service our clients' business in remote markets.
So what kind of real estate do you guys do? Do you do office stuff? Do you do warehouse? Do you do manufacturing? Do you do retail? There's so many types of business real estate. Do you have a specialty?
We do. We don't do. It's easier to describe what we do by saying kind of what we don't do. We don't do any retail. We don't know that business, and it's a specialty in and of itself. And we don't do any residential development and or sales at all. So our business really is commercial real estate, and we classify that as office and industrial. So we have guys that will represent owners or sellers, buyers as well, in buying manufacturing buildings or warehouse buildings, leasing warehousing and manufacturing space. But the large part of my practice is representing corporate clients in the relocation of existing offices or opening new offices in office buildings.
So what do you like about what you do? Why don't you get like a normal job somewhere?
I don't know that I'd enjoy a normal job. And believe me, commercial real estate is not a normal job. It is a fun job.
What do you enjoy about it? What do you like about what you do?
Well, it allows me to be creative. I mean, every single real estate requirement has its own unique set of circumstances.
What do you mean?
Well, from geography to price points to product type to internal design to financing, there are so many different things that go into pulling a deal together, and you really need to be good at all that in order to make a good deal occur for your client. So it's not everybody that can do it, and it's not all science. If it was, I think, you know, our business would be populated by engineers. Instead, it's populated by guys who are creative and yet also disciplined enough to be able to pull the math together, to be able to pull some of the science together, but then also pull off the art of making something happen.
So if I'm a business person and I tell you that I have a company of 100 people or 10,000 people, and, you know, we need the office space in, in Conshohocken or wherever it might be,
I would say, are you ready to go out and look at space with me today? Let's go.
Huh. But, I mean, I guess there's a million variables. It's like, where do we want the walls? And what color do we want the car? What kind of other stuff do you guys
need? Well, there's a decision tree and there's a pyramid. And there's certain threshold issues that you have to start with, including can you afford it? For example, the Conshohocken market is probably one of the highest priced submarkets in the Philadelphia region, with rents running from $33 to $36 a foot plus electric. Here in Bala Cynwyd, where we're sitting, the rents are running between $24 and $27, so maybe you're better positioned there. And perhaps you would go into some of the King of Prussia markets that might be $19 to $22 per square foot.
Wait a minute. Hold on for a second. I thought that a commercial real estate broker would help me get space, but you know all this other stuff. Can you help me, a business person, in other ways? It sounds like, you know the different markets, you know the different rents, you know, like the different space available and stuff like that?
We do. We keep track of all that stuff. Our practice has grown and evolved from being a what we like to call real estate jockey. In other words, taking client A from space one to space two, to really becoming a corporate, more of a consulting practice, where not only do we get involved in the financial end of your real estate deal, but we work very hard at aligning the goals of that particular real estate decision with the long-term business plan that you're operating your business under.
So you're going to talk to me about what my future needs are going to be, and maybe, you know, if we're going to need additional space or other stuff like that. You're like helping me business plan. I mean, you're like part of the team or something.
I think in the most successful relationships that we have, we are part of the team.
You're confusing me here again. What do you mean successful? Okay, let me ask you this. What makes for a successful client? What kind of client do you like working with the best?
Well, our most successful relationship is one where we are involved at a very high level. helping on the strategic side to understand what markets are important to us and what services are important to our clients.
Mm-hmm.
And then through a process and further understanding their business, we're able to advise them as to what location would satisfy that particular plank of their mm-hmm. of their platform.
All right, let me dig into some of the other stuff here. You sure. have some partners in the business?
I have two, yeah.
Well, I know one of them. I don't understand why you chose these partners. Why do you have partners? Why not keep all the money yourself, especially
Lou?
My
two partners, Lou Battalese and Pete Davidson, are two of the greatest guys you'd ever meet. And
Lou?
Lou in particular.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, Pete. Lou and Pete, both. I've known both guys for a long time, and I know how they do their business, and I know that the way they do their business is the way I would want my clients to be handled.
When you started working with them, did you have a lot of legal agreements signed and stuff like really nailed down so that they couldn't burn you?
No. We started basically. Our business was on a handshake for the most part. Is how our partnership started, and then eventually it had to get formal because
trust.
We were investing money. But
you
yeah.
had trust in business,
yeah, and I trust those guys and still do. In fact, our partners meetings are sometimes they're an argument, sometimes it's we're throwing stuff at each other. But under normal circumstances, mm-hmm. we have yet to go to a vote. We haven't voted on anything.
Because you guys know how to work with each other.
We work with each other.
So where you're from originally?
I'm from Southwest Philadelphia.
How many brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest of eight.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So how are you different than the rest of them? Or what makes
different?
You special? Or what happened to you in your childhood?
Oh, my. As the oldest of eight, we're very close. We're still very close. I mean, emotionally as well as age. I mean, I'm one of Irish triplets. My brother is 12 months from me, and my sister is 12 months from him. So the three of us are
mm-hmm.
very close. My mom had five kids under the age of five, three in diapers uh-huh. while we were growing up in Southwest Philadelphia.
So how'd you feel pretty responsible, I guess, as a kid?
I guess you learn to be independent as mm-hmm. as a child. And in the infrastructure that was Southwest Philadelphia at that time, it was very easy. Everybody was looking out for one another. It's not like today where, you know, on the streets of Allison Street, there were eyes everywhere behind every door and there were ears behind every screen. So mm-hmm. everybody was looking out for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. The future of commercial real estate, is it something that's good to get into or is it a dying industry?
Some would look at our business and say it's one of those smokestack industries, you know, the old infrastructure of commercial grade real estate. And because of the internet and the way business services are delivered, that the, you know, we're basically dinosaurs and platforms like ours will not exist. Well, I beg to differ with that. I think that our use of technology and bringing our business kicking mm-hmm. and screaming into the world of high tech mm-hmm. and the world of technology mm-hmm. platforms has allowed us to expand our business platform mm-hmm. and expand our reach to our clients.
All right. Are mom and dad still around?
I lost dad about a year and a half ago.
Sorry to hear that.
Thank you.
Was
Mom's
that
still there though.
Was dad aware of the business success you're enjoying nowadays?
No, not really.
How do you think he'd feel if he was aware of all the stuff that you're doing?
I think he'd be very surprised.
Surprised or proud? What do you mean?
Both.
You think he'd be surprised?
I think a little bit because you know my father was an Irish immigrant, as is my mother. They both came over off the boat at different times. There's 10 years between the two. My old man worked three jobs most of his life, so we never saw him, and it was. The kind of thing where he developed he helped us develop an incredible work ethic. So it was more like, you know, when I went to college, my dad said to me, "What are you going to college for? You're in the union at the Acme, in the retail clerks union. You know Wendell Young personally." I'm like, "Dad, it's the Acme.
There we go.
I want to go to college." So
exactly.
It was, he didn't disown me and it wasn't anything mm-hmm. as abrupt as that, but it was very, the hairy eyebrow was up for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. what's the website address for Jackson Cross?
We're at www.jacksoncross.com.
John, we're running out of time here, but if I was so smart, what question would I have asked you or should I have asked you that would give our listening audience a better sense of who you are?
How long have I been married?
How long have you been married?
Yeah.
How long have you been married?
Good question. I've been married 23 years.
23 wow. years.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
And to the same woman.
Congratulations.
Thank Congratulations. You very much. We've been speaking with John Morrissey, partner of Jackson Cross Partners here on Executive Leaders Radio, as well as we've had the opportunity of speaking with Kevin Finn, president of Iron Hill Brewery, Janice Carrington, CEO, founder, and owner of Plum Enterprises, Jack Protesto, president of ProSigns, and again, most recently, John Morrissey, who's been married 23 years, partner of Jackson Cross Partners. This is Herb Cohen. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Keith Ashlock from the Delaware Valley Industrial Resource Center, Araceli Gunther, Emerging Strategies Group, and Jim Hunter, Muffin, Howe, and Hunter. I'm still trying to figure out why your name's the last one, Jim. For being my co-host here on Executive Leaders Radio, I'd like to thank them because they've helped me structure the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an interesting and educational show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. I'd like to encourage you folks to join us again for our next edition of Executive Leaders Radio. And have a nice day. And by the way, don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a nice day, and bye-bye.